The last 2 weeks, we have seen Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. We have seen him reach that point where he would say that I've reached this point at the point of death as far as how upset he was, stressed he was. He is reaching a breaking point, it seems, many times. Falls down upon his face and he prays for an hour to the Father, as Hebrews says, to the one that could deliver him, praying to let this cup pass from me. But the answer would be no. And Jesus would finish those prayers with an acknowledgement to whatever the answer was, not my will, but thy will be done. And his will, the Father's will, was that Jesus die. And so he sets his eyes forward on that. He sets his eyes forward now, knowing that there will be no reprieve, that there will be no out, that there will be no other way. The only path forward for Jesus Christ at this point is to drink the cup. Drink the full cup, to be immersed in pain. You know, baptism is used in reference to his pain as well. He was baptized in it, completely immersed in it. And that is what Jesus has before him now. As he finished those prayers and found the disciples sleeping, and we certainly understand the difficulty, the mental pain that that brought upon Jesus, then Judas comes and, in a very disgusting way, kisses him and betrays him to the Jewish leadership. And all the disciples leave. Jesus is all alone. All have fled, all have left him. The only people around him now, the only people that have, that he's given his control of himself over to, people that hate him with all their might. We need not live under illusions that he's going to be treated well. In the United States, yes, our arrested people are treated well. Not in this time. Even Roman citizens at times were treated poorly. Prison was a death sentence if you didn't have someone to take care of you, like Paul had when he wrote to the Philippians and talked about how they had taken care of him. And so here is Jesus now in the hands of these people, and it says, having arrested him, the Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. Bound him like somebody that was dangerous, right? Remember last week we saw that when they said, who do you seek? And they said, Jesus. And they all fell back on each other trying to get away from him. They've obviously been told some terrible lies. But they bind Jesus like a common criminal. And they walk him back across that Kidron Valley to Jerusalem. You know, this is the first of many of their own laws that the Jews are going to break. We're going to see this as a recurring thing this morning. Is going to be this recurrence of them constantly, the Jewish leaders constantly breaking the law that they claim in arresting Jesus they're trying to save. Because it was not legal to arrest a person at night. And that makes sense, doesn't it? God understood that if you want to hide something, you do it at night. Do it in the open of day. If it's fair justice, that there will not be repercussions. They arrest Jesus at night. Not only that, they're taking to try him, and it was against the law to try someone on the eve of a feast day. And it is Friday on their calendar, and Saturday is the Passover. It is a Sabbath day as well. It's a high Sabbath, as they would call it. And so it was illegal for them to do that. They break all these laws, and yet it's all right, isn't it? And we begin to understand, we begin to see what Jesus meant when he said, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, right? Because if it served their purpose, it was all right. We understand where he says that you bind burdens upon others that you're unwilling to carry yourself. We understand why Jesus spoke in Matthew chapter 7 in the Sermon on the Mount about judging, the same judgment that you apply to your own life. Because these men knew nothing about those kind of principles in their lives. It says, and they led him to the house of Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now, Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. And all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes gathered together. Oh, that was a magnanimous statement, wasn't it? It's better for one to die than everybody. Why are you picking him? What has he ever done to threaten the people? But notice too, what is the problem with, it says, and Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, what's wrong with that? A priest was a lifetime appointment. So we see that there's a problem here, even in the sense of the high priest system that is in place at the time of Jesus. During this time that we're talking about right here, where all the chief priests are gathered together, I want us to understand something. We're going to come back to it in just a moment. But the denials of Peter are going to take place during this time where Jesus is talking to Annas, okay? And the final one's going to take place as he's leaving Annas' house. So we'll get back to those denials in just a moment. But I want you to know that these two timelines are meshed together. And Peter is outside while this is taking place inside, doing speaking the denials of Jesus that Jesus told him he would. Well, by this point in Israel's existence, the high priest position had become a political position appointed and removed by the Romans. It was not a position necessarily that even followed the lineage of Aaron at times. Annas was most likely considered the true high priest of Aaronic lineage, and Caiaphas was not. So most Jews still recognized him as high priest, even though the Romans had removed him and placed Caiaphas in there in his place. Now, it could have been possible that since the high priest position was held for life, the Jews refused to acknowledge anyone else while Annas was still alive. That as long as the one that they considered to be the high priest, he was high priest in their minds, regardless of what the Romans said or what the Romans did. Now, Annas was appointed to the position in AD 6 and removed in AD 15. We're in AD 30. And the position was passed around to his sons and then to Caiaphas, his son-in-law. His authority is evident here in that they brought him to Jesus first, and he will be the one that sends Jesus to Caiaphas for him to be tried in front of him. We also see in this text that they're going to strike Jesus because of what they perceive to be Jesus disrespecting the high priest of the people. It says the high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. I think it's interesting that Annas was questioning Jesus about his disciples. Do you think his disciples are in danger tonight? Why are you asking about them? Trying to figure out where they're at. And how many? Where are they? They're looking for Jesus' disciples. They want Jesus' disciples. They don't want them to get away. Because they are a threat. And that will be proven, won't it, in the book of Acts. As they will constantly become a thorn in these same men's side in the early part of the book of Acts. See, Annas apparently wants to know this. So the disciples have a reason, I guess, in their own minds, and it's probably a valid reason to want to be hiding. But they should have stood up for the Lord. Because there may be a day when we have what can be considered a valid reason for hiding, right? Let me tell you what, no amount of persecution, no amount of illegality will ever do away with the Great Commission. As Christians, we will never be able to hide. We will never be able to be quiet and be what God wants us to be. And that's where the rubber of faith meets the road, right? What am I willing to give up? What am I willing to face for the cause of Jesus Christ? You know, as far as his questions concerning Jesus' teaching, we do not know which ones he specifically asked about. It's most likely that he was searching for something to accuse Jesus of. And this was the case throughout the process of the trial by the Jewish leaders. I don't know if we can call it a trial. It's more kind of like a fact-finding mission or a accusation-finding mission, I guess is a better term. They're trying to find out what they want to accuse Jesus of. They're trying to find out what they can use to have him put to death. They don't even know. So they're searching. They're reaching. to try to find, to try to get Jesus to condemn himself. Jesus answered him, I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together and spoke nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who have heard me, what I spoke to them. Know what they know what I said. Now Jesus makes it clear to Annas that he already knows what Jesus taught. Because Jesus didn't whisper it in dark corners. He spoke openly in the synagogues, in the temple. He has been in the temple nearly every day, this particular week, teaching. He cleaned the temple out on Tuesday of the money changers. Jesus said, I've already told you all these things publicly. And you know, not only is Jesus just making a statement about him telling things publicly or ask the people, he's doing this for three reasons. Number one, to make clear that Jesus was not subversive. All that he had done, he did publicly. Number two, to make a point that in a trial, Annas had the burden of bringing witnesses. If you want witnesses, you won't have trouble finding them because a lot of people heard me teaching. Go out and ask them. You have the burden to bring witnesses in. The burden is 2 to 3 witnesses, right? To confirm something is true. In fact, that's one of the things that the Pharisees themselves say to Jesus in the book of John, is that how can you speak about yourself? You're only one, therefore your witness is not true. But now they don't want to live by that anymore, right? Jesus couldn't speak without 2 or 3 witnesses or it was untrue, but yet these guys can. You know, Jesus told them that day too. He said, 2 or 3 witnesses or not, it's still true. You know, whether you want to accept it or not. He goes on to give them 6 witnesses, which was 2 to 3 times, or however you want to look at it, 2 to 3 times what was required by the law there in John chapter 5. Also, third, it was to make a point that Annas is violating yet another of the Jewish laws. Let me tell you, folks, the U.S. Constitution is not original unto itself in many things. And people that say that it has nothing to do with the Bible are seriously mistaken. Under Jewish law, you were not allowed to be forced to witness against yourself. They could not ask you to condemn yourself, to witness or to bring forth evidence against yourself. And yet that's exactly what they're trying to do to Jesus here. So this is a reminder that your witnesses are not supposed to come from me. It is supposed to come from the people that heard me. Those that heard me teach. So stop trying to get me to testify against myself. Now when he had said this, one of the officers, when Jesus said these things, when he said, I spoke to them, they know what I said. It says, when he had said this, one of the officers standing nearby struck Jesus saying, is that the way you answer the high priest? And Jesus answered him, if I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong, but if rightly, why do you strike me? Now, I don't know. I tend to think that in the journey across the Kidron Valley and into the city of Jerusalem, I tend to think that those people that had Jesus then were not treating him very nice. But here is our first point in Scripture that Jesus is physically abused. Folks, this is just the tip of a very big iceberg. This guard hits Jesus. And let me tell you what, if he hates Jesus, he may hate Jesus, but even if he doesn't even understand anything about Jesus and he has some kind of perverted respect for this man Annas as high priest, you can bet that this slap was not some little kiddie slap. That he struck Jesus with all of his might. Because either he saw him as someone disrespecting God's high priest, or he saw him as someone he already hated anyway. But he strikes Jesus. And Jesus responds to him. He says, if I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong, but if rightly, why do you strike me? And Jesus, in making this statement, is pointing out again that they just broke the law again. Because it was illegal in the Mosaic law to strike an accused individual. Oh, folks, they're going to break this law over and over and over and over and over again. I'm not sure this law even registers in their minds, even when Jesus calls them on it right here. It says, now the men who were holding Jesus in custody were mocking him and beating him. And they blindfolded him and were asking him, saying, prophesy, who is the one who hit you? And they were saying many other things against him and blaspheming. After about an hour had passed, Anna sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. So we have this situation where Annas questions him. Jesus gives an answer. He strikes him. And obviously Annas realized, I'm not getting anything out of this guy. I'm just going to send him to Caiaphas. Let Caiaphas deal with him. But they're not just going to send him over there, because we got to have our fun with him first. How many of us have been hit in the head or hit our head or whatever? You see stars. How many of us have been hit when we didn't know it was coming? They blindfold him. And they hit him. And folks, this is 3 years of hatred coming out. They've been waiting to get at him for 3 years. They've been waiting to get their hands on this man. They've been waiting to destroy him. And you think the minute that they get the opportunity to mistreat him that they're going to go light? They blindfold him and they hit him with all of their might. And you can imagine not knowing those blows are coming, and yet they land in the stars that would have been seen when they landed on his head. Tell us who hit you. Jesus knew exactly who hit him. Every name. And he would say, Father, forgive them. They struck him over and over. This goes on for an hour. It isn't like they take their turns. Each one gets a hit and they quit. This goes on for an hour. We're not even to the scourging. We're not even to the cross. They haven't put a nail in his wrist or in his feet. They haven't put a crown of thorn on him. They haven't hit his back. And yet they've already beat him for an hour. And we just think that that was all there was. And yet we are hours from the cross. It's still dark. It's like 3 a.m. in the morning. It's not even daylight yet. And they're not done. They're just the first group of a savage night that our Lord endures. It says that they were blaspheming. I find that interesting that the Bible records that. Blaspheming would be that accusing God of evil and sin. Y'all understand what they're saying there? For every person that accused Jesus of doing evil or sinning, they blasphemed. Because Jesus was God, is God, will always be God. Annas then sent Jesus bound to Caiaphas. Now let's jump out to the courtyard and Simon Peter. And we're backing up, remember, to the time that we arrive here at Annas' house before these events took place. And we're going to go into the time that they are taking place. It says, Simon Peter was following Jesus at a distance, and so was another disciple, that other disciple being John. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest, but Peter was standing at the door outside. So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to the doorkeeper and brought Peter in. Now they had kindled a charcoal fire in the middle of the courtyard, for it was cold. Peter, below in the courtyard, sat down with the slaves and officers, warming himself at the fire to see the outcome. Then the slave girl of the high priest, who kept the door, seeing him as he sat in the firelight and looking intently at him, said to Peter, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth too. You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you? He denied it, saying, I am not. Woman, I do not know him, nor understand what you are talking about. John obviously had some connections. We talked about the success of the business that he probably left along with Peter. And you know, there it obviously played into this to some degree. John and Peter were not, we sometimes call them poor fishermen. You know, it appears that they probably weren't poor. It appears that they probably did all right. But he knew the high priest for whatever reason had a relationship with those that manned the doors and was able to get them in. Once they're in there, the slave girl by the fire recognizes Peter. Now, I think, you know, as we think about this in our minds, we get this idea of Peter and this slave girl standing by themselves around the fire. You got to remember, it says, and the officers and the slaves, they're all there. Who's there? The mob. It's the same Jewish officers that came to get Jesus and their men. That's who's there. I mean, they still got a prisoner, don't they? They still got to make sure he stays in place and no one comes to break him out. I mean, if he's that dangerous man, he's probably got some followers, right, that are going to come and try to break him out. So we got to keep guards here. We got to keep men here. So these are the very people that were in the Garden of Gethsemane. This courtyard is probably quite crowded. It's probably not just Peter and the slave girl and a couple of others. If you've seen the Passion of the Christ and the clip of Peter while all three denials in the movie take place in like 30 seconds, which would not be accurate. They take place over more than an hour. But, you know, that's probably very accurate. They were in a very pushing, shoving, a lot of people around. And, you know, obviously if she's saying something, others are hearing it and it's drawing attention of everybody toward Peter. And so he feels it necessary to make sure that he denies it and puts, you know, and denigrates her to some degree. You don't know what you're talking about, woman. So that people will not think that it is him or he is one of Jesus' disciples. Now, while there is no excuse for Peter's behavior, I believe that when we think about it in the sense of him standing there amidst a mob, people trying to kill him, I think we can kind of get a better idea of why Peter might have did the things that he did in that courtyard. I'm sure that the anger of these people extended all the way to anybody that had association with Jesus. Obviously, this slave girl didn't like it, the thought of him being in there very much if he was a follower of Jesus. And if you think, and if you've been lied to, and you think that people are going to try to steal Jesus back, then he could be an infiltrator, couldn't he? He could be treated as an enemy immediately by the soldiers that are in place. But let's continue the narrative that takes place there outside of Annas' house. And he went out onto the porch and a rooster crowed. You know, why didn't he get it right there? You know, you'd think that right there would have immediately kicked him back to just a few hours earlier when Jesus said what he said to him in regards to him denying him. But when he had gone out to the gateway, Simon Peter was standing and warming himself, and the servant girl saw him. Don't you know, he was like, oh, here she is again, right? But this also might be indicative of she really is concerned about him being there too. You're a servant of Jesus. I mean, these people, they've been lied to. They hate Jesus for whatever reasons. Servant girl saw him and began once more to say to the bystanders, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. This is one of the disciples. And again, he's denied it with an oath. I do not know the man. See, she's not just talking to Peter anymore. She's trying to get people to pay attention, right? There's danger. This is one of his disciples. They're here. Y'all need to do something. Peter's, I don't know this man. Swears an oath that he does not know Jesus. Then one of the slaves of the high priest, being a relative of the one who Peter cut off his ear, said to Peter, did I not see you in the garden with him? Uh-oh. Now we got somebody that was in the garden by his own admission, right? This is one of the mob. Not only is he one of the mob, but he's kin to the guy that Peter cut off his ear. Surely, he says, you are one of them, for you are a Galilean too. Well, that was bad no matter what, but bad in this situation especially. Even the way you talk gives you away. He began to curse and swear, I do not know this man you are talking about. And immediately, while he was still speaking, a rooster crowed. A second time, the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he told him, before a rooster crows twice today, you will deny me three times. And he went out, and he wept bitterly. So he has this man man that's kin to Malchus, may have been standing close to Malchus. But here is the guy. I mean, even if you think that they might be trying to come out after Jesus, right, with violence, here's the image of the man, the one that grabbed the sword and charged the crowd, right? There's already a violent image of this, of Peter coming and slashing with a sword, not slashing for anything in the middle, folks. If he got an ear, he's going for the head. That's a kill shot. He slashes his ear off. You know, I don't take too kindly to people trying to kill people I'm kin to. How about y'all? I'm not sure I would be too happy about that. Now, question that pops into my mind is, if this man was in the garden, he saw what Jesus did for Malchus, how can he still feel like that? And you begin to understand, and you begin to see what Jesus meant when he said their eyes are closed, their ears are closed, and their hearts are closed. And I can't do anything for them. I mean, yeah, you saw him cut the ear off of this person you're kin to. Did you miss Jesus putting it back on? Did you miss the miracle? Apparently. Or you just somehow disregarded it. You know, this text takes place about an hour after the first denial, as Jesus is obviously leaving the house of Annas now to be carried to the house of Caiaphas. So when we think about Jesus looking at him, we think about Jesus bound, probably hands and feet, being pushed, being shoved. He's already been beaten for an hour. So just imagine the swelling and the blood on his face already. He's being pushed and shoved by people that hate him. And yet, with a swollen face, he turns and he looks at this man. I have a feeling that Peter still saw that face as he died on a cross himself. I have a feeling that that face, that look, drove Peter, just like Paul's life before he became a Christian drove him, to do all he could to serve Christ with all of his might. Just imagine the look from Jesus. He just cursed, swore he didn't know Jesus. And it appears to be almost as if, you know, as the rooster crowed, Jesus came out of the gate and looked at him, right at him. You know, think about that just for a moment. While Jesus is going through all this, while people are hitting him, he knows what Peter's doing in the courtyard. He hears his denials. He hears him curse him. He hears him swear he doesn't know him. He's in there enduring a beating, and all the time he's hearing one of his closest friends cursing him. See, we're blessed not to know everything going on around us, aren't we? The Lord knew no such blessing. So it only added to his pain and his abandonment. You know, Peter then went out and he wept bitterly. Folks, we have lost the ability many times to mourn our sins. I think we fail to see Jesus looking at us with the same look that he looked at Peter with. We fail to see how badly we hurt God with even what we consider the smallest of sins, and how we treat Jesus with utter contempt when we deny him by being unwilling to serve, being unwilling to give our all to the Lord's church, to that which he bought with the blood that he's going to shed upon the cross. Don't be so hard on Peter until you've taken a real good, hard look at yourself. Because there's a lot that we do in our lives, if we're not careful, it's just as bad. And we deserve the look just as much. says, now the chief priest and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus so that they might put him to death, and they did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward giving false testimony against him, but their testimony was not consistent. Two stood up and began to give false testimony. Well, that's what they need, right? They need two. They got two here all of a sudden. Two stood up and began to give false witness against or testimony against him, saying, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another made without hands. Not even in this respect was their testimony. Because you think you could get that phrase right, right? And be consistent. Isn't it sad? All the hoops they're having to jump through to try to find even an accusation. You're not even supposed to arrest a person. That's another law that they're violating. You're not even allowed to arrest a person under Jewish law unless you have a charge. They don't even have a charge. They're looking for a charge. And they can't even, you know, these guys are so inept, and so, they can't even find two people to lie the same lie. I mean, this is a circus. Part of me thinks, you know, I know that some of the men that are in this room or in this number of men, this Sanhedrin, I know that two of them are disciples of Jesus Christ. Secret. At least for the next day. They're going to become very open at about a little after 3 o'clock. That's Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus. Now, Nicodemus has already been ridiculed by them for sticking up for Jesus at a previous time. They even asked him if he was a Galilean. That wasn't a nice thing, by the way. Maybe they're helping. Now, the Bible makes it clear they did not cast their vote for Jesus to be put to death. But maybe they're asking the questions that are causing the witnesses not to be able to agree, right? Because they all have the right to ask questions and to interrogate the witnesses. And so, here they are, here's Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea, and they're asking the right questions. And it's making the different people that are coming forward lying, it's showing that they're lying. And they can't work with that. So they keep bringing people over and over. And you know, it amazes me. You have all these witnesses, you have all these things going on, and yet Jesus Christ sits there and says nothing. He doesn't even have to defend himself. Why? Because he never did anything wrong. I think this goes behind what Judas was talking about as well. Well, things are not going well. So it says that the high priest stood up and came forward and questioned Jesus, saying, do you not... Well, let me go back and say one other thing before we get into Caiaphas. Isn't it just like, you know, just show you there's nothing new under the sun? Isn't it just like somebody to take the words of Jesus Christ and totally misuse them? I will tear down this temple, and in 3 days I'll build it up again. Was he talking about the temple in Jerusalem? What was the temple? His body. He wasn't talking about that, but see, even all the way back there in the Bible, you can see people taking the words of Jesus just as they do today and distorting them to their own damnation. Well, it says, do you not answer? This is what Caiaphas says. The high priest stood up, came forward, and questioned Jesus, saying, do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you? But Jesus kept silent, and he did not answer. And again, the high priest was questioning him and saying to him, I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One. Let's get the picture here, folks. This is the judge. How would you like it if you were on trial? We got some lawyers in here. If you were trying a case, Derwin, how would you like it if the judge just got down and decided to jump in with the other side and start questioning your witness against you? You wouldn't feel like you're really going to get a fair trial, right? Here is the judge. He jumps down, and now he's doing the questioning. He's the prosecutor. Boy, you're in trouble. You haven't got a chance. No help whatsoever. I adjure you by the living God. He shouldn't even speak God's name. I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are Christ, the Son of the Blessed One. Let me tell you what, Jesus has waited 3 years to answer this question. They asked it to him earlier this week and he wouldn't answer it. Because he knows what's going to happen when he answers it, right? He's waited 3 years to answer this question to these men. Now, he's told the disciples and he's told others. But he hasn't said it to these men. He says, "You have said it yourself." You know, that's probably the only truth KF has said this whole night. Was that Jesus Christ was the blessed one of God. "I am. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Jesus didn't just give the answer, did he? He went ahead and gave him a little bit more. Caiaphas, you're the judge right now. Not really, but you're the judge. But let me tell you what. There's two senses in which Jesus is talking here. Let me tell you what. There's one day I'm going to be the final judge, right? Caiaphas is going to stand before him one day. And he's going to be judged fairly, unlike Jesus was. But also, Jesus is more likely talking about here the destruction of Jerusalem. This coming in the clouds, you need to understand, coming in the clouds does not always mean the judgment day. Coming in the clouds is a term that's used in the Old Testament. It was used in reference to Egypt, that he would come on a swift cloud upon Egypt. Talking about punishment that would be brought upon a people by the justice of God. Caiaphas, you're going to see the day when I bring total destruction to this place. When I destroy you for what you've done. Jerusalem is going to pay a heavy price for their hand in, as Revelation puts it, the blood of all the prophets, but especially the blood of Jesus Christ. "Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, 'What further need do we have of witnesses? He has blasphemed. You have heard the blasphemy. How does it seem to you?' Then they answered, 'He deserves death.' They all condemned him to be deserving of death." So Caiaphas puts on a show, doesn't he? He gets his Oscar award for best actor. He rips his clothes. Oh, he's blaspheming. We got our charge. And it's the biggest one of them all, right? Man saying he's God. He is. That's the only problem. Jesus Christ is the only man that could ever say that. And it not be blasphemy. Oh, he's deserving of death. Well, that's what you wanted all along. You were going to get that no matter what. He's deserving of death, and they all condemn him. They all bring down their wrath upon him. So now they have him condemned to death. And so what else do we have to do till daybreak? We have to wait till daybreak to have the real trial. Well, there's nothing left to do until daybreak but pick on Jesus. Then they spat in his face and hit them with their fist. Another slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, you Christ. Who is the one who hit you?" Once again, same mockery. And the officers received him with slaps in the face. So they just keep beating him. Folks, if you thought the only thing that Jesus went through was the cross, sadly mistaken. If we knew somebody that had been beaten like Jesus has been beaten right at this point, we would have great pity on them. So often we can think about Jesus and what he went through on this night and what he's going to go through later this day, and it doesn't even seem to faze us. We can sit in the Lord's Supper and we can just take it and it doesn't even have any effect on us. What does that say about our hearts? We'll weep for someone on the news. We'll weep for someone we don't even know. And yet we don't even have a feeling for the man that died for us. And we wonder why faithlessness is so prevalent. Because the one that we're to have faith in, we don't know. We don't love. Too many times we just don't care. And we'll all go, "Oh yeah, Nathan, I care." No. If we don't live our lives wholly for Him, you don't. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. And if you don't love Him. And you don't care what He did. If work's more important, if activity's more important, if anything's more important, you don't care about the Lord. And that may be harsh, but that's just the truth. And I just don't think that Jesus sits around going, well, that's okay, they're busy. You know, he had a lot of things to do when he came and died for you. He spent a busy 3 years, but still had time to live for God. It says, early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders and the scribes and the whole council immediately held a consultation together against Jesus to put him to death. Now we're going to make it official. When it was day, they led him away to their council chamber, having it in a public place now, which is what they're supposed to do. You're supposed to have a trial in a public place, not in a residence. Never have a trial in a residence. That's against the law. It's supposed to be held at the city gate or in another public place. Even the Romans hold it in a public place. It says, when it was day, they led him away to their council chamber, saying, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, I love the times when Jesus does speak, right? Because he never tells them necessarily what they want to hear, but every time he tells them the answer, he also adds in there a condemnation to them. If I tell you, you will not believe. You know, I could tell you, but you're not going to believe it. And if I ask a question, you won't answer it. Remember, Jesus knows these men, knows their hearts. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God. Well, that's not what they wanted, right? That's not the answer they're asking for. They need to get the blasphemy charge out there. And they all said, are you the Son of God? And he said, yes, I am. Then they said, what further need do we have of testimony? Do you realize he just got convicted without two or three witnesses? Do you realize he just got convicted by his own testimony? He has just been convicted in violation of the very basic tenets of Jewish law. There's no one else there witnessing except Jesus Christ. For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth, where they said before, if it comes from your own mouth, that's only one witness. It isn't true. Well, by their own reasoning, this isn't true. See, it works for them now. We need to be careful that when we look at the scriptures, that we don't apply reasoning one place and a different reasoning another place just because it fits what we want. Because otherwise we make the same mistake these men made. Then the whole body bound him and led him away and delivered him to Pilate, the governor. Well, this has been a heavily orchestrated event up to this point, hasn't it? It is 6 a.m. in the morning or a little bit after now. Jesus Christ, we have no record of him having anything to drink, anything to eat since 8 or 9 o'clock the night before. He has spent the night under terrible stress. He has spent the night being beaten, being mistreated, being spat upon, being mocked, and being in the middle of the biggest farce of a legal proceeding that has ever been in the history of man. And we're just getting started. He now goes to the Romans. He now goes to Pilate. He'll go to Herod. And he will face even more abuse from these individuals. Appreciate your good attention this morning. Next week we'll begin there with how this escalates with Pilate, and it will escalate into the scourging.